can always tweet us at 99.3 ESPN Radio. We might even tweet you back. This is Scheman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Shepard, 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. How you doing? On a Friday, we are getting you into the weekend. We are off Monday. Everybody else is off today, apparently. In case you're just tuning in, well, you already know Chris is out on vacay. We've got Pete Shepard in pain because he's old and he's golfing and he injured his back. Started working on his game during the show yesterday with back pain. He's gone today. He's in traction.
Craig called it at the end of the day yesterday.
Fact. So if you want to make fun of Pete Shepard on the Stony Brook Golf Club text line, it's the best way to get your text read today as well. In fact, I think we had a couple more going into the top of the hour. Rose is a bedroom guy, says he's at home watching Lost Boys. Probably catching up on all of his TV shows. 224 says Pete is about to get a massage with Robert Kraft. I like that. I like that a lot. Cape Cop chiming in on our conversation about Donovan McNabb, who insists his stats are better than Troy Aikman and that he should be in the Hall of Fame. Do you get a bronze bust in the NFL Hall of Good or just a bobblehead? That's just a bobblehead. Yes, I put Donovan McNabb in the Hall of the Very Good, but not a Hall of Famer.
And if I may respond to Boomer, who says, Rick, as a fellow Vikings fan for 50-plus years, I would like your thoughts of the Cousins debacle. Yeah. I say, let's just pump the brakes a little bit on the debacle talk, okay? I mean, he had a disappointing year, guaranteed. So did the entire team across the board. Let's just wait and see what he can do, okay?
No doubt. They made
the move they had to make.
Yep.
What, did you want to keep Case Keenum? How did he do last year? Where's he playing now?
Yeah.
So
I hear you.
Let's wait.
All right. Very good. A lot of football talk about, of course, last night the NBA as well with Toronto with a very impressive win on the road at Milwaukee to take the edge in that series 3-2. Game 6 with Drake in tow on the sidelines tomorrow. So you can catch that out. Catch that tomorrow. And a Stanley Cup final begins on Monday, St. Louis and Boston. Mick Colaggio will join us at the bottom of the hour for a preview of the Stanley Cup final. We really haven't done that yet. Rick Kamla will join us. He just texted me. He would like to bump our NBA conversation. He's from NBA TV to 5:30 instead of 4:30. That's fine. We'll accommodate him. And I believe we are going to connect with Jason Fitz from Spain and Fitz on ESPN. Although today, if you haven't heard the announcement, is the last day of Spain and Fitz at 6 o'clock, the show that follows us when we get off the air. Sarah Spain is still going to be in her 6 o'clock time slot. He's moving up earlier, doing some first and last. And Golic and Wingo work as well. So we got a lot going on this Friday to get you into this holiday weekend. I also teased a thing I'd like to make some time for, because it's a 3-day weekend for most of you. Some of you may be making the trip up to Orlando to go to Disney with the family. And I have the rundown of expenses. We all know it's expensive. But, I mean, when you just see it in print, it just jumps out at you. And it was Roses and Bedroom Guy that said he took his daughter and her boyfriend to Disney just 3 weeks ago. Just that one restaurant in particular, for five of them, the bill hit $300. Whew. That's painful.
Yeah.
That's painful.
Go to Disney if you don't got a good credit card.
Yeah. Yeah. You need that credit card up there. There's no doubt about that. All right. Let's get into this NFL a little bit. There was a piece by Dan Graziano that caught my attention, the ESPN writer on ESPN.com, and he is trying to predict the next NFL players who could force contract standoffs, right? These things happen. We saw what happened with Le'Veon Bell. He just decided to sit out an entire year. We don't see that very often. And, of course, the Ndamukong Suh finally signed. That really wasn't a standoff, but he did sign yesterday for 9.25. Gerald McCoy is about to figure out the good side of life now. He's never made it to a playoff game with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's got 10 teams interested in him, and the price is up to about $11 million right now per year. So he's living. But as far as standoffs go, interesting list. Number one on his list is Jadeveon Clowney with the Houston Texans. And he's already made more than $34 million of his fully guaranteed four-year rookie contract at his fifth-year option. This is a six-year coming up. The Texans will franchise him at $15.9 million. Here's a guy that's got enough money in the bank where he can just sit out if he doesn't want to do that franchise tag. I don't know. The Texans are going to run into a problem. And I'll tell you what it is. And you know what? I got to tell you all know that I do this show here for Fort Myers, moved here 2 years ago. The last market I worked in was Houston. They wanted to run me out of town. What was it? 2010, 2011. The Texans were starting to get good. Arian Foster was kind of doing his deal. They won a playoff game against the Bengals. Everybody was all excited. And they thought that this was the beginning of a nice run. And I said, no, this is a short window. This is a one and done because the NFL had just changed its salary cap announcements and its rules. I said, they are not going to be able to afford to keep this team together. Enjoy it now. Figure out how far you're going to go now. Buy your swag. People are nuts down there. They love their football like you wouldn't believe. The week of the playoff game against Andy Dalton and the Bengals, you would drive by a sporting goods store like a Dick's or something like that, lined up around the parking lot for paraphernalia everywhere. Nuts. Absolutely nuts. So they wanted to run me out of town when I was a doom and gloomer. And I said, look, this is it. They're not going to be any good after. We'll give them one more year, and then the window's going to close. Because of the way the salary cap was, they just had to sign Arian Foster. And I said, they're not going to be able to keep their offensive line. As a matter of fact, they got rid of two of their five guys. Just cut them. They let another defensive player go. And they, the next year, they had the worst record in the league. I believe they had the number one pick. I was right. They were wrong. They hated me, but I would rather be right than liked. So, too bad. They're going to run into this again. I'm here to tell you. With Jadeveon Clowney. And eventually with Deshaun Watson. Now, they're good. They got, what, three more seasons with him? But they're going to have to, you know how it is with quarterbacks. You got to do your quarterback deal with 2 years left on the deal. Right? That's what everybody does. You don't want him going into a lame duck season.
Didn't you, both you and Pete, pick the Texans to maybe go as far as the AFC Championship game last year, right?
Last year? Possibly. Might have been wrong about that.
I think you did.
Thanks. Boy, what a memory of an elephant over here. Wow. All right. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. I'll admit to that. But, I mean, they're eventually going to have to pay their quarterback. They've already paid J.J. Watt like $100 million. DeAndre Hopkins, I think he's been paid. And you know those receivers got their hands out for a new deal every 2 years because the receiver market just skyrockets. Merciless, I think they've signed them, and I think they paid big money for one of their offensive linemen. They're not going to be able to give Clowney big time. So, yeah, I agree with them. I agree with Dan Graziano. Jadeveon Clowney could be an interesting little standoff. He's got Melvin Gordon running back of the Chargers. He was the number 15 pick in the 2015 draft. He is very underpaid. I believe I think he's only like $2 million a year. He's overperforming his contract. He's going to want money. But running backs are tricky. Running backs are tricky. Owners hate to give running backs money because they get hurt and they peter out and they get burnt out. And then after the age of 29, they really don't do much. Byron Jones, corner with the Dallas Cowboys. We'll see what they got. They've got other priorities right now. Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper. We'll see what's left for Byron Jones. Here's an interesting one. In fact, the Saints have two on this list. Michael Thomas, wide receiver. This guy was the 47th pick in 2016. So he's on his rookie deal. He's not making any money. But he's been a top five receiver in the league. And you got Drew Brees throwing him the ball. I think only Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, D-Hop, and Mike Evans-Sarah are the only players that have caught more passes than him over the last 3 years. You've got to pay that guy. You've got to pay that guy. Alvin Kamara's another one. But again, a running back, what do? You use him and abuse him and throw him away? He was the 67th pick in the 2017 draft. And he's been performing. You got to pay the guy. Reminds me a little bit of the situation with, you know, I mentioned Arian Foster and the Texans when I lived in Houston. Now, Arian was undrafted. So he had all of his productive years on an undrafted, lousy contract. Now, he finally did get paid. But then he pulled a hamstring like every other week. He's like Pete. He's like Pete Shepard. He got injured a lot. And then came down here to Miami for a year, and then that was it. He was out of the league. Juju Smith-Schuster on this list. Well, he ran into a problem. He was the 62nd pick in 2017, so he's still working for free. His salary this year is $850,000. That's a steal. Guy throws up, catches 1,400 yards a year. So they got to pay him. So anyway, I thought that was a very interesting list. As far as guys that may be the next NFL players who could force some long contract standoffs. Speaking of football, I want to hear from Jerry Jones. Remember, Ezekiel Elliott got into that problem at the music festival in Las Vegas a couple days ago. We had video of him bumping into a security guard, knocking him down. Security guard didn't press any charges. Ezekiel Elliott has had some domestic abuse accusations and some stupid behavior over the years, and ultimately was suspended 6 games by the NFL. So now if he does something stupid, and by the way, he was lit on something. No doubt about it. And maybe he was just drunk, but he looked like there was more. I mean, we saw the whole video. Got to be careful how you behave in public when you've already had a major strike against you. But Jerry Jones says, nah, we're fine. No trouble with the Cowboys anyway.
You've been very supportive of Ezekiel Elliott over his time, ups and downs, your reflections on his Vegas video.
Well, I think that the main thing is that I don't see anything that we that needs supporting in terms of his status with us has not been impacted in any way. And frankly, I know how conscientious he's been in the off season. And that's good enough. No, I don't see that having any consequences for us.
Conscientious in the off season. What does that mean? And we got him on video knocking a security guard down. What does that mean, Jerry? And by the way, the last time Jerry was confident about Ezekiel Elliott not being punished by anybody, he got a 6-game suspension. Remember, it was Jerry being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Hey, we got this thing with Ezekiel Elliott pressing. What's the situation? I am 100% confident that the commissioner will do nothing here. We're fine. And then he was suspended for 6 games, and he was shocked. Shocked and appalled. Meanwhile, I saw a piece today. I wish I could remember who it was. Was it a local? Was it a Miami writer? Anyway, the headline was that the Dolphins are pretty much vindicated because Adam Gase is proving their point for them that he shouldn't have been around Miami anymore. He's acting like a goofball as the head coach of the Jets and all the craziness that's going on up there.
Boy, he really is, isn't he? I mean, even you see him in the press conference and stuff. He's just got a real strange look about him.
He does.
He really does.
I don't remember him having the wide-eyed look in Miami.
Right. You see, look like kind of a deer in the headlight kind of thing going on.
Well, here he is insisting, because remember, the word was that he thought they overpaid for Le'Veon Bell. Mike McCannon, the general manager, who was just recently fired afterward. All that swirling around. So he was asked when the media shows up for the OTAs, hey, are you going to trade Le'Veon?
Going back to Le'Veon for a second, there's been some speculation that you guys might try to trade him before the season even starts.
That's ridiculous. That's the first time I've heard of that.
So that's not
going to
happen.
No.
He denied that he pushed for the GM to be fired, though. Let's take a listen to this.
And whether it's true or not, what do you make of the widespread belief that you stabbed Mike McCaffrey in the back after?
Yeah, that would be false. That's just not true. Christopher made a decision.
Meanwhile, he says he's all, you know, he's got this Le'Veon Bell thing. He's got the GM thing. We're going into June. He doesn't have a GM. He says, you know what? I'm done with this drama.
Adam, at any point, did you express to Christopher that you could not work with Mike
no.
for his GM?
No.
You wanted him gone?
No.
That?
No.
How would you describe your relationship with him, and could you have worked with him this year?
It's irrelevant. I mean, all that's irrelevant because the decision was made. We're moving forward. I mean, we can't hash about 2 weeks ago. I mean, we sit here and tell the players, move on. Don't worry about the last play. Don't worry about the last game. I mean, what happened last week, it's over, and we got to move on.
Well-crafted answer. I'll give him points for that one. Tell the players to have a short memory. Forget about the play. Move on. Yeah, I'm moving on. I don't want to talk about that. So the question is Adam Gase going to be the GM, or is he going to be the de facto GM and have a puppet come in and be the GM while he calls all the shots? He says the new GM will not be a yes man.
Adam, what do you say to the notion that people perceive this as you're going to be picking the next GM, that this person is just going to be your yes man?
I don't know. I don't really hang out with yes men. So if it's somebody that I already know, then it's probably somebody that's not going to be a yes man.
Why not?
Because I don't associate myself with people like that.
Very interesting, huh? Very, very interesting.
Going to be an interesting season for old Adam Gase in New York.
Yeah, that New York media, man. They smell it. They're going to like chum in the water, going after it. Quick couple of notes. Two Clemson football players will miss the entire 2019 season after their PED appeal is denied. This is after failed drug tests with the NCAA, tight end Braden Galloway and offensive lineman Zach Gela ruled ineligible for previously tested positive for trace amounts of osterine in December. Of course, remember Dexter Lawrence, the defensive lineman. He failed two NCAA administered tests prior to the college football playoff against Notre Dame at the Cotton Bowl. Makes me wonder if Dexter Lawrence would have been ineligible for the entire season this season as well had he not gone to the NFL. And young Georgia quarterback DeJuan Mathis had surgery to remove a cyst from his brain. Expected to make a full recovery. Scary story there. All right, real quick, while we got some time, as I mentioned, this is a holiday weekend. It's a three-day weekend. For Pete Shepard, it's a four-day weekend. And for Chris, it's a 10-day weekend. Yeah.
At least.
Many of you will trek on up I-75 and across I-4 and go to Disneyland in Orlando. As you know, it is very, very expensive. I found this on, I think, MSN.com or something like that. Kind of actually put all the numbers together. You know, we talk about if you go to an NFL game or an NBA game, it's like, you know, $500, $600 for a family. You got to pay for the tickets, the parking.
So they do have Florida resident discounts, but it's still expensive.
At Disney?
Yes.
Yeah. When's the last time you've been?
Oh, probably about 10 years ago.
All right. See, when I lived in L.A., I went to Disneyland all the time, and Legoland and SeaWorld, but I gotta be honest. You know, being a member of the media.
You were comped.
Yeah, they were free. They were free. And I lived close enough that I went all the time with my kids, and they were small at the time. First thing on this list, if you want to go, now this would not apply to anybody here, but the first thing on the list is the airfare. Let's say you're a family of four somewhere else, and you're like, oh, let's go down to Disney World. Count on $412 per ticket times four. That's $1,600 right there. But if you live in Florida, you can just drive, pay for gas. Park tickets. And by the way, this is for 4 days at Disneyland. For your family.
But there's four themes, right? Four theme parks, I think, so.
I guess. Yeah, that's right. You got Epcot, Disney,
right.
All that.
Magic Kingdom.
It says here $1,004. That sound about right? Actually, sounds kind of low for 4 days, right? But maybe if you get it, you get a discount if it's a four-day package as opposed to, like, four individual days. $1,000.
I have no clue.
$1,000. Transportation, $50 a day. You can get a max pass for $90. What does that help you get to the front of the line?
Yeah, sounds like it.
Okay. Yeah, that's $15.
They got stuff like that.
That's $15 a day per person per day. Comes out to $90, I guess. Any pre-trip purchases?
Sunscreen.
Yeah.
Things like that, right?
Stuff like that.
Towel, bag.
Good call. You've done this before. $240. Food over the course of 4 Disney days.
Yeah, that's where it'll kill you. This is a big one.
It says 386, but that's got to be per day.
That's per day.
So you're spending $1,400 on food. If you do 3 real meals for 4 people for 4 days, right?
Yeah, that's up there. The food is expensive there.
So we're already in 4 figures for the tickets. We're 4 figures in the food. Souvenirs says $97, I guess. I'd try not to buy too much junk. But, you know, if you kid, the smaller your kids are, the more they're going to be whining and wanting you to buy stuff.
It's everywhere.
You got to get some Mickey ears, put balloons, little things that glow at night and spin around and make noise, all that kind of stuff. We don't even have hotel on here. Where's the hotel?
Well, that might be included in the price of the park tickets.
Really?
It might be. If you're staying on the grounds.
I don't know. Wow. Well, according to this scenario, their trip came right under $2,300. $250 which were covered by Disney gift cards that he had at a promotion from work. Wow. Mm. Unbelievable.
Yep.
It's tough on a working man and a family.
It's the most magical place on earth.
And then.
It ain't cheap.
Once you pay all that money. You stand on cement in line for an hour per ride.
In the scorching heat.
And it's going to be 94 degrees on Sunday here. I don't know what's going to be up there. Yeah. Every time my family wants to go, I'm like Ebenezer Scrooge. I'm like, I don't want to spend thousands of dollars to go up there and stand and wait for an hour and be on 4 rides all day and then call it a day. That's not appealing to me. That's not a vacation. You know what a vacation was to me before I moved here? Fly on down here and go sit on the beach at Sanibel Island.
There
that was
go.
My vacation. That's what I looked forward to more than anything else. Now I live here. I just go drive over there.
Just go with the staycation.
It's free. Well, it's $6 across the toll.
Hey, it's $6 on the Sanibel Causeway. That's a lot.
Yeah. It's all right.
Used to be 3.
Yeah. Ripping off the man. So anyway, could be quite a pricey weekend for you and your family this weekend. All right, a lot of sporting events we got to cover here this weekend. The Stanley Cup Final starts on Monday. We'll talk with Mick Colaggio, and we'll get his thoughts, a preview on Game 1. That's coming up next. Rick Kamel will join us in the 5 o'clock hour from NBA TV. We'll talk about this Eastern Conference Finals and some free agency around the NBA as well. Jason Fitz from Spain and Fitz, who follows us at 6 o'clock. On ESPN Radio, scheduled to join us on the 4 o'clock hour as well. And keep your texts coming in, making fun of Pete Shepard for injuring himself playing golf and not being here today and getting a free 4-day weekend. All that and more coming up here on Sheeman to Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Facebook has turned into a platform where anyone can spew nonsense. Sounds like these guys. Like our Facebook page, 99.3 ESPN Radio. This is Sheeman and Shepherd.
Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. No Shepherd today, no Chris. But I'm still here, ready to go. Get you into your 3-day weekend. It's a big sports weekend. Later on, we'll talk some NBA playoffs with Rick Kamla from NBA TV. And Monday, and hopefully you didn't forget, because it's like an 11-day delay, the Stanley Cup playoff begins with Game 1 on Monday, St. Louis and Boston. Mick Colaggio is a friend of the program from the Standard Times and also the Rink Rap podcast. He is with us right now. Mick, how you been?
Thanks for having me on, Craig. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Yeah, your boy Pete got hurt playing golf, so he's not here today. Just thought I'd throw
him. I really feel for him, you know.
Yeah.
He's a warrior, and if he could be there, I know he would be.
No.
I've worked with a guy at several stations back like 100,000 years ago.
He is not a Warrior. He's laying down listening to the show right now. So, interesting delay. The 11 days before game one for the Bruins anyway. What has their schedule been like? Did they cut the guys loose for a couple of days, or they've been coming in every day before they started practicing, getting ready? What's their schedule been?
They did cut them loose for a couple of days. They let them recover, spend time with their families, heal up, and then they resumed practice, and then they had an off day, and then they practiced again. And then last night, TD Garden, they had a scrimmage involving their 10, what they call the Black Aces, the recall players from the Providence Bruins, their AHL affiliate, and they mixed them in together and wanted to give them something closer to a game atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So instead of practicing during the day, they held a 7 p.m. scrimmage. They charged fans $20 for tickets and $10 to park on the TD Garden, and the place sold out.
Really?
And, yeah, it was unbelievable. And they played two 25-minute halves. And Pete may recall that the last time the Bruins played two 25-minute halves was the last hurrah game against the Montreal Canadiens at Boston Garden in September of 1995,
wow,
right before the new arena opened. And they had that great skate around with the legends of hockey, including all of the greats. It was fantastic. But this event last night, the fans are behind this team. They packed it in to watch them essentially practice. Hard to believe, 17,565.
Now, that leads me to something I've been curious about. If the fans in that area, and they're clearly passionate about all their teams, and there's been a lot of success with all the four major teams, if you were to rank them, and I know you cover hockey for a living, but if you were to go to the average Boston fan, how would they rank them? Patriots and Celtics and Red Sox and Bruins, how would they rank them?
Yeah, I think the easy answer to that is the Patriots and then everyone else if they're winning.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people would say the Patriots and then the Red Sox because you've had multiple championships in this era, and then the Bruins and the Celtics depending on what your preference is. Some people are cultured in New England into hockey. Some people are cultured into basketball. It depends on what you grow up with and what is handed down to you by your parents and or your dad or whatever, and what you wind up. I grew up watching all four teams. You know, I sold hot dogs at when the Patriots old stadium was a new stadium. I grew up 5 minutes from there. When I was a junior in high school, I was hawking hot dogs in
nice.
The stands. And I grew up, we went to Fenway when we were kids. You know, I didn't get to that many Celtics games because I was hockey obsessed, but I went to some.
Yeah.
And I always watched on TV, no matter who was playing. And I think the era of the four-sport fan is unfortunately waned.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it also it's a good sign to the Bruins that the Red Sox moved up their Wednesday night game from 7 to 6 Eastern so that the fans could get on and watch the Bruins. Well, that's pretty awesome.
By the way, what would a hot dog go for back in the day?
I can't remember hot dogs, but what I can remember is those little megaphone Fenway Bleachers megaphone-shaped popcorn holders.
Yeah.
And I think those were like 25 cents or 50 cents. I think the tickets for the Bleachers were only $70. We'd get on the subway. You had to switch lines a couple of times, so it was a little bit arduous getting to Fenway on the subway. But it worked out for us. We did it when we were teenagers. We went to games on our own, and they were hilarious when you sit in the bleachers. And back in the days of the old Twi-Night doubleheader, that was a lot of fun.
Good times. Mick Colaggio's with us from the Standard Times, getting ready for Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final on Monday between Boston and St. Louis. I want to talk about the Blues in just a moment. But your final thoughts on the series against Carolina and the dominance that the Bruins had there. What's the one thing you would point to from that series?
Well, the Carolina Hurricanes have been quite a story this year. We know they have a new owner, Tom Dundon. We know he upset some people when he let go franchise icon Ron Francis from the GM job and brought in Don Waddell, who's a seasoned old USA Hockey guy, used to be the GM of the Atlanta Thrashers. Definitely has a great amount of experience. Rod Brind'Amour is coach. It turned the corner in early January when Jacob Slavin emerged as an elite defender in this league. And I think that was the missing ingredient to that hockey team all these years. And for years, I've been hearing about, you got all these young defensemen who can really rush the puck and join the attack, yada, yada. And I'm thinking they're not going anywhere because they don't defend well. And then Slavin comes along, and they get DeHaan from the Islanders to augment that. Hamilton is on top of their shoulders. Hamilton has become quite an offensive weapon for them from the blue line. He was obviously a first-round draft pick of the Bruins, and the sky was supposed to be the limit for that kid. And whatever happened, they moved on from Dougie when Don Sweeney took over the GM job, and they wanted to get the locker room right. And right now, it's worked out for the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, they get Teravainen from the Blackhawks. Aho is their own guy, and those are two great young Finnish hockey players. And they've gotten some character in that room, and they hit hard, and they skate hard, and I think they're just not ready. I think it's down the road for them, but not yet. And the Bruins were a team that's much closer to that point. I didn't even think this was the Bruins' year. I thought maybe next year,
right.
But it's broken for them, and now here they are.
Talking about Mick Colaggio, let's take a look at the St. Louis Blues on this one. Now, this was a team, I believe, at the worst record or the fewest amount of points in January in the entire NHL. And what changed for them in the second half of the season?
Well, they also had a coaching change. And we've seen that Pittsburgh Penguins won the Stanley Cup after Mike Sullivan came in to coach that team. In this case, you know, Mike Yeo, good coach, good guy. But like goaltending in hockey, there's a lot of good ones. You got to have the right one. And Ryan O'Reilly was about the only thing that was going well for the Blues early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
When Craig Berube became the coach, and it's a lot like what happened when Bruce Cassidy took over for Claude Julien, who is the greatest coach in modern Bruins history, and by far. And yet when Bruce Cassidy took over the Bruins, they caught fire. It's like something happens when the change of this magnitude, people snap into either a sense of relaxation and their talent starts coming out, or they get on the same page and they feel refreshed and they feel like they rally around it. They accept roles more readily. And the Blues have always been a good hockey team. Pietrangelo, excellent defenseman. Parayko, emerging star. Bouwmeester, still got his wheels at 35 years old. That team is a good hockey team. They've always had good character up front. Steen's a wonderful hockey player. That team it just hadn't gone well for them, and they needed the spark. They needed the change. Sometimes it has to be something cataclysmic. It was for them. But they're a team that belonged in that conversation in the West with the Predators and the Jets. They're right in there with those guys, as they should be, and it's them this year.
And certainly battle-tested, having come out of a seven-game series with San Jose and the double overtime win, so no doubt about that. When we look at this team, I sense your feel of history. Every time I talk to you, you've been watching hockey for 50 years. You get that. This is a rematch of what, the 1970 Stanley Cup final. I don't know if that means a lot to any of the younger fans. St. Louis has not been back since. The Bruins have, of course. But how about your thoughts on the historical perspective of this matchup?
It's only people like myself that look at this from a Boston angle and say the Bruins played the Philadelphia Flyers in the 74 final and then the 76 semifinal, the 77 semifinal, and the 78 semifinal, and then didn't play them for like until 2010. Mm-hmm. It happened with the Blackhawks. The Bruins played them in 70, 74, and 75, and 78, then didn't play them until 2013. The Rangers, 70, 72, 73, and then not till 2013. The Maple Leafs, same thing. So many teams that the Bruins had a history with in that era that they then didn't have any history with for so long, in big part because of the division of the conferences as the league expanded. But now, all of a sudden, here they are. And I joked on Twitter that, hey, I always thought the Blues were a wonderful franchise. It's the first place I ever saw an NHL game not involving the Bruins, and went to several there at the old St. Louis Arena, and which some people knew as the Checker Dome. And the Blues, I always thought it's a great city, great fans, great logo, great situation there. I always figured I'd be pulling for them when they finally made the final. Oops. And, you know, here we are. And who knew they were going to be playing the Bruins in this series. So, but that's the way I'm looking at it. As far as Bob Uecker flying through the air goes, those were my Bruins. I started watching in the mid-60s before they got good. And that was my first team I ever fell in love with in hockey. And, so the Blues were, I think, you know, people make jokes about it and say that's overrated because it was a sweep and they got swept by Montreal twice. That's silly because the Blues were a very good team for a few years, and they were getting better every year, mm-hmm. and they had beaten the Bruins in the games they played at St. Louis during the regular season. There were no guarantees, and Jacques Plante was their starting goalie. And in the game one at St. Louis, Freddie Stanfield fired the puck from the left point, which means the Bruins must have been on the power play. Phil Esposito tipped it, and the puck tumbled up into Plante's mask and knocked him out cold. They had to bring in Ernie Wakely, the backup, and the Bruins just went crazy on him. And then romped in game two, and then they put Glenn Hall in net. And the Blues were better in Boston and actually took game four to overtime, where Orr won it so famously. But that was not at all the absolute gimme that people are now looking back on and thinking the same way. Those are a lot of very good hockey players on that team in a league that had just expanded, and a lot of the players were either NHL veterans from other clubs who had history in the 60s with those clubs. That, to look at the Blues back in that mocking way to me is just really absurd.
Talking with Mick Colaggio. In our final couple of minutes here, I got a couple of categories I want to bounce off of you, kind of a little bit of rapid fire, and see who you think the better team is. For example, who has the better depth, in your opinion?
Well, the issue for me is this. Boston has a very young defense. Charlie McAvoy is their ice time leader. He's 21 years old. That's unprecedented to win the Stanley Cup with an ice time leader at age 21. Bob Uhr, 22, and at the end of his fourth full NHL season, when he went flying through the air. Drew Doughty, if you want to get modern about it, 2012, 22 years old at the end of his fourth NHL season when the Kings won it for the first time. This team has Charlie McAvoy at 21. Brandon Carlo playing behind him on the right side at 22. Zdeno Chara is on the left side. He's 42. And then the other guys, Krug is in his prime. Grzelcyk is, is sort of stage two of his career, and he's in his mid-20s now. And then Connor Clifton, through injury, winds up getting an opportunity and never looking back. And all those guys are like 5'9". And
right.
and the Blues are a big, strong team, like the Columbus Blue Jackets, whom the Bruins solve, because they have tremendous back-checking on the Bruins forwards. They just absolutely hassle the opponent. You saw it in game four at Carolina. It really showed up there. What the Blues have the ability to do, I think, is muscle Boston's forwards in the middle of the rink. And if they succeed at it, they can take advantage of the left side matchup problems that the Bruins have on defense. No team has been able to do that because of the extraordinary support Boston's forwards give their defense. Mm. Now, if the Blues can make that happen and isolate those defensemen through their own physicality in the neutral zone, then they can cause the Bruins problems that no other team has caused to this point. That's, to me, where the series really is going to be decided. If Boston can successfully back check and support their defensemen and allow them to funnel the puck and make easy puck plays and not have to struggle physically, then I think the Bruins can beat them.
All right, final question for me. Who has the advantage if the power plays go their way?
I think Boston. The Bruins special teams have been incredible. In fact, throughout most of the regular season, the Bruins were way too power play reliant. Teams like that tend not to win the Stanley Cup. Teams with lousy power plays that can score a goal here and there in the playoffs can win it. The New Jersey Devils were ranked 30th out of 30 teams in 2003 and won the Stanley Cup because they were the best 5-on-5 team, hands down. The Boston Bruins are now a good 5-on-5 team thanks to the Charlie Coyle acquisition. Having him nailed down the third-line center role and buttress that team, that gives them four lines of cycling, and you never take the foot off the gas, you never release the pedal from the metal, and you're able to put your hands around the neck of the opponent and squeeze and not let go. And that's what changed the Bruins, the Charlie Coyle acquisition. That changed them into a viable 5-on-5 team and made the Stanley Cup possible.
Very good analysis. Thank you very much, Mick. Have a great Memorial Day weekend and enjoy game one on Monday.
Thanks, Craig.
I appreciate that. That's Mick Colaggio from the Standard Times. Also, you can catch the Rink Rep podcast and follow him at Twitter at Mick Colaggio. Interesting thoughts. Stanley Cup final, game one, Blues Bruins on Monday. Later on, we'll talk some NBA playoffs and NBA free agency with Rick Kamla from NBA TV. Jason Fitz from Spain and Fitz will join us next hour as well. And also, in 1 hour, we're still playing Wikipedia, even though Pete is out today. It's Rickipedia. We will stump Rick Church on the other side of the glass. You'll still get a chance to play for prizes. All that coming up. Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Check out whatever ridiculous Twitter poll we're running at 99.3 ESPN Radio. Now it's Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN.
Sheeman and Shepard and the Black Eyed Peas on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. No Pete, he's injured. No Chris, he's on vacation. I'm holding down the fort, but we got Rick Church on the other side of the glass, spinning the stacks of wax. We are good. He is going to step in next hour with Wikipedia, since Pete is out. We're going to play Rickipedia to stump him. Today's category will be the movie Cool Running, since Chris is in Jamaica. It's a movie about the Jamaican bobsled team with John Candy. So we will do that. Rick Kambla will join us from NBA TV later on in the show. And next hour, we will talk to Jason Fitz from Spain and Fitz, the show that follows us at 6 o'clock every day on ESPN Radio. Although I believe today is his last day on that show before he moves on to other assignments earlier in the day at ESPN. You know, Rick, how when you come in here, I'm always complaining about how cold it is.
Yes, it's very, very cold.
Yeah. How, you know, you're tougher than I am. You got the T-shirt. You're good. Chris frequently, and your studio's colder than mine.
Yeah, it's cold in here.
Chris will usually wear not one but two hoodies. I've always got a hoodie on. Pete's a maniac. He always just wears shorts and a T-shirt. Whatever.
Me too.
I don't see. He's from Boston. You're from Minnesota. So this, I mean, even though it's cold,
yeah, but I've lived
are
here.
You laughing me off, like, because it's not that cold to you, apparently.
It's cold, but I don't. I mean, you know, I've lived here almost 17 years now, so it's, you know, it's not like I still have a lot of Minnesota coursing through my blood, but it's it is cold, but it doesn't bother me that much.
Well, I saw on several places on the internet today an interesting study that said cold office temperatures are hurting women's productivity. The study was done. It had conducted tests for both mathematical and verbal tasks on 543 students, men and women, and they changed the temperature ranges between 61 and 91 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, it's in this. The thermometer says it's in the 60s here in this studio. It feels
about
colder.
About 67 is where they usually keep it.
That's
across
what
the
it
hall.
Said. Right. Now, I notice if you just bump it up a couple degrees, 70, 69 feels a little better. I don't need 70. I don't need to be hot in here. But women had to put forth more effort to submit answers in colder temperatures. They did say just knocking it up a couple of degrees helped their effectiveness. Said men gave fewer answers in warmer temperatures, by the way. So I don't know what that means. Is it calling us to complain about how cold it is in the studios here at 99.3 ESPN? Are they calling us women? It doesn't seem like, according to this study, men are too concerned about it, but women are affected by the cold temperatures. And I complain about it every day. What does that say about me?
Yeah,
I see you choosing your words carefully.
Yeah, no comment. I guess you and Chris, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I don't know. It's the fella across the hall. You know, they're the ones who turn it down.
I know. They
that have, other show that's been on the air for like 25 years.
They have control.
That have a street named. I guess when you have a street named after you.
Is that how what it takes?
I think so.
When I have a street named after me.
When we have Sheeman and Shepard Boulevard.
Then we could control the thermostat in this building?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. If that's what it takes.
Well, it's by sections. It's just this section of.
Right, but the thermostat's in their studio,
in
not
their
ours.
Studio.
We're
right.
Just at mercy at whatever they want to put on.
Where they put it at 67.
Yeah.
And the second they leave, when I'm here at night, I kick it to about 71.
Whew. Man, wish we could do that. I literally step outside during the break just to warm up. You know?
Yeah.
It's what you got to do.
Yep.
All right, coming up, we'll talk with Jason Fitz from Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio, get his thoughts on the playoffs and free agency. We'll talk a little football with him and talk about his new show coming up as well. And Rick Kambla in the 5 o'clock hour, plus Rickipedia filling in for Wikipedia. Your chance to win prizes all coming up in the next hour. Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.